guys. Thank you for the presentation and for the invitation to be here. I'm very happy to be in Minneapolis. It's actually the second time, and the weather is almost like in Denmark. So, my presentation will be about the Danish experiences using constructed wetland to target nitrogen removal in agricultural drainage discharge. And a major part of the presentation will be a focus on a sub-catchment scale mitigation strategy. So I will not go so much into experimental details. Okay, in Denmark right now we are facing a paradigm shift changing from a general and also insufficient regulation to a more differentiated and targeted regulation. Tile-drained areas pose high-risk areas due to these high nutrient losses for nitrogen. 45 to 60% of the nitrogen loss is transported by tile drainage. And for heavily tile-drained areas, of course, this fraction is even higher. So a targeted regulation, of course, requires targeted cost-efficient measures. Restoration of riparian lowland is considered one of the most cost-efficient measures, but wetland restoration is not always possible to apply, and it's also not sufficient in terms of impact. So additional measures like constructed wetlands directly targeting the drainage nutrient losses is considered a potential good solution. So in Denmark, we are working with two types of drainage filter technologies or constructed wetlands. The surface flow constructed wetlands, where drainage discharge is directed into the wetland, a surface flow, discharging through a sedimentation pond, and a wetland consisting of deep, open, and shallow vegetated zones. And then the subsurface flow constructed wetlands, where water is allowed to infiltrate this permeable filter bed, which can be optimized for the specific nutrient removal. So in Denmark, we right now have 34 full-scale constructed wetlands of these different types. They were constructed, the oldest one is only 5 to 6 years, and we started monitoring since 2013. So the results that I'll present today is based on this ongoing monitoring. So this is the surface flow constructed wetland, the oldest one, Rustens Eje, which receives drainage water. You can see the yellow tine drains. A field of 100 hectares discharges the drainage water into this surface flow constructed wetland and return it to the tile drain into the stream. So this was 100 hectares of agricultural fields and 1 hectare of surface flow constructed wetland constructed in 2010-11. So monitoring was started in 2013 and is still ongoing, and this is the preliminary data. You can see here the drainage discharge dynamics, cubic meter drainage water per day, and what you, of course is characteristic for these clay loam soils is that we have this large seasonal variation in discharge and also large yearly variation from high peak flows during the winter discharge, December, January, February, to a very low or even no discharge during the summer, June, July, August. At the same time, we can see the changes in total end concentration. The darkest one is the inlet, and the lightest one is the outlet. And we can see that for all times, we actually reduce nitrogen, total nitrogen concentration through the wetland. But we can also very easily see that during the winter times, the high discharge cold seasons, we have a very low reduction in concentration, increasing towards 100% reduction during summer because evaporation impedes the outflow from the wetland. So this is, of course, a temperate climate zone. Mean drain temperature in Denmark is between 6 to 8 degrees. So we are, of course, facing some of the same challenges that has already been mentioned. So this seasonal variation is much more clearly demonstrated by this graph showing the nitrogen reduction as a function of months. This is August going to the winter. And as you can see here, we have the nitrogen reduction from 10 to 20% during the coldest month, especially January and February, increasing steadily to 100% through the spring to summer, and again decreasing through the autumn. Quite interesting, this behavior was similar for all the monitoring years. And that tells us one thing. That tells us that the yearly nitrogen removal efficiency actually depends on the seasonal variation in drainage discharge. So it matters a lot whether the drainage discharge is in November or December or in January or in February. And this is reflected for this specific wetland in the nitrogen yearly nitrogen removal from year to year. This year, 25%. The next year, 34%. So even though the nitrogen load differed, we have the same removal efficiency, and the yearly removal was determined by the seasonal variation in drainage discharge. So summing up the preliminary results from the ongoing study of the surface flow, we have a large variation in both drainage catchment, nitrogen loss from fields, drainage discharge ratio, how much of the infiltration is actually going through a tile drain and how much is infiltrating to deeper groundwater. That also, of course, affects the nitrogen load to the wetland and allows different nitrogen removal rates in the lowland. So based on these preliminary data, 1 to 3 years of monitoring, we have removal efficiency varying from 18 to 36. The 18 is only one, and the mean is between 25 and 30. So an important point to remember is, of course, that the lifetime of these wetlands also has an impact. Now this is very young wetlands, and this one graph shows the progression in nitrogen removal efficiency as a function of months after construction. So we may see some changes over time for these wetlands, and right now, of course, we cannot discriminate whether it's actually a progression in development, building up peat and so on, or whether it's affected by climate. So moving to the subsurface flow, we work with 11 different types, both individual and test types, and this sketch shows one of our experimental test sites where we have in parallel 6 filter beds receiving water from a catchment of 80 hectares. The water is distributed equally into these 6 filter beds. At this place, we are testing 3 hydraulic designs: horizontal flow, vertical upwards, and vertical downwards. The filter matrix is composed of mixed willow wood chips and crushed seashells in different volume ratios to have different carbon contents. And all wetlands are vegetated with common reed. So for the nitrogen removal, the blue is the inflow inlet concentration, and the black is the outlet for the 6 different types. And very quickly here, we see the same pattern as the surface flow. Low decrease in concentrations during the winter flow, and high decrease in concentration during the summer, which is from May to October, actually. The differences between the filters, I'll come back to that. And this is even better reflected in this graph, showing the end removal efficiency as a function of time. But here we can see the red one is a hydraulic reloading rate, the black one is the hydraulic residence time, and the blue one is the nitrogen removal efficiency. And we can clearly see that the nitrogen removal efficiency goes down when the hydraulic retention time, residence time, goes down, and increases when the hydraulic residence time increases. Of course, now we cannot differentiate between temperature and hydraulic residence time, as they co-vary. We have the high discharge during the cold season. So we did a controlled lab experiment on the same filter matrix, looking at end removal efficiency as a function of hydraulic loading rate. And what we actually found, the influent water had a concentration of 12 milligrams per kilo. The water was oxygen with a constant temperature of 8 degrees. And what we found was that at low residence time, 11 hours, the effluent was still oxic, and we only had a nitrogen removal of 5%. By decreasing the hydraulic loading rate, the effluent became anoxic, and the removal efficiency increased up to 60%. So that tells us that the removal efficiency is highly dependent on the hydraulic loading rate. What we also found in these studies, we did a lot of tracer tests, we found that the solute transport was characterized by non-equilibrium flow, physical non-equilibrium, and that the denitrification was actually diffusion controlled. So that also explains why flow is rather important. In terms of the filter design, you can see here, based for the two measurements, full measurements years, that for the horizontal flow, the horizontal flow in general performed best in terms of nitrogen removal, and the we were surprised that we didn't see any effect of the carbon ratio here. On opposite, the vertical upwards flow performed worst. And what we also found from our tracer test was that the vertical upwards flow was the one with the highest degree of non-equilibrium flow. That means the highest degree of preferential flow bypassing a major part of the matrix. The vertical downwards was slightly better than vertical upwards. And the increase in the last year was unfortunately a result of a reduced hydraulic loading for this specific wetland part. So this is ongoing monitoring still, and of course we expect to develop some response functions correlating nitrogen removal to key parameters. But even though we have this response function, how do we cope with this sub-catchment mitigation planning? There are some challenges to resolve. How efficient are these wetlands compared to other measures? Where should they be implemented at a catchment scale? And what is the impact on the nutrient balances at subcatchment scale? There are also issues about how do we cope with the stochastic drainage discharge variation and how, and that's mostly for the authorities, how do we predict local scale inloads to the wetlands to calculate back how the substitution of other measures. So let me focus on the first two parts. This is a subcatchment in Denmark. It's 612 hectares with 640 hectare agricultural, intensively used agricultural areas. It's moraine, clay loam, hilly, and it's actually drained completely. And you can see here that this pattern is the drainage, but we don't have drainage pipe detections for the whole catchment. It has been fully instrumented with stream station, drainage stations, piezometers and everything. So we have complete monitoring of nutrient transport for the last 3 years. So shortly, the nitrogen transport leaving this subcatchment is 10,700 kilo per year. And based on measurements on stream and drain, we have a nutrient release of 25 to 26 kilo per hectare per year. And the similarity of these two measures tells us that this is a highly drain-dominated system. Tile drainage is responsible for the major transport. So the reduction target set by the Danish water plan is amounting to 18% of the nitrogen load. So now the question is for the farmers, how can we reduce the nitrogen load to reach this reduction target? What measures should we apply? So, a reduction target of, it should set 18% here, of 18% corresponds directly to 1,900 kilo per year. So looking at the traditional measures, catch crops set aside, we can see to reach this target using the known N effects, the required area would be 120 hectares of catch crops. And for set aside also in the same range, depending on whether it's upland or lowland. So these measures are not very popular by the farmer. They don't want it. So alternatively, they could make wetlands. And I forgot to show one thing. In the western part here, you can see in the western part, we have this lowland area. This lowland area is today used extensively. In the eastern part, we don't have any lowland. So the possibilities could be, one part could be to restore the wetland in the western part, to restore the lowland to a wetland. And we know that the nitrogen effect of the wetland would be 50% of the load. So to achieve the target, we need a wetland of 15 hectares, getting water from 149 hectares of agricultural land. Alternatively, we could implement the surface flow or the subsurface flow constructed wetlands. And now I have taken the values that we got from our measurements that are shown earlier. For the subsurface flow to achieve the target, we need actually about 3 hectares of surface flow wetlands. So to take out 3 hectares and construct a surface flow wetland, receiving drainage water from 300 hectares agricultural land. Or the subsurface flow, to achieve this reduction target, we only need 1.1 hectare. And as you can see, for the surface flow, the wetland is 1% of the catchment, while for the subsurface flow, the wetland is slightly smaller, but it's not that small. I mean, I have heard a lot of you today saying these are very small, takes up very much area, but we still need the hydraulic residence time. And depending on the porosity of the filter, we still have some area need here. So Looking at these measures, it's very clear that instead of the area-based measures having transport targeted measures like the wetlands and constructed wetlands are for sure much more effective. And what I will not show you today is that we also did cost efficiency analysis so far only on the surface flow, and they are by far the most cost efficient measure in Denmark, also competing catch crops. So, in conclusion, for the subcatchment planning, doing an intelligent planning, a consultancy will say that, okay, in the western part, we have the possibility of restoring this lowland, this 15 hectares, and it gives us a reduction in nitrogen of this size. But we could also, in the eastern part, construct wetlands, surface flow 3 hectares or subsurface flow 1.1. So why don't I suggest that the surface flow are implemented in the western part? Because it would not make sense to have a constructed wetlands up here at the fields when the drainage water is already infiltrating the lowland areas. Combining these measures will of course allow a much more that we actually exceed the reduction target and get some potential for the farmers to increase the fertilization rate or get rid of some of the regulations without increasing the environmental impact. So this is generally a very good solution, and in Denmark we actually don't have social barriers about for the surface flow. So in conclusion, surface flow are cost efficient measures even with the observed removal rates between 20 and 30, so we don't need things to grow into heaven. They are still cost efficient measures compared to the existing. They are also now accepted in Denmark as a new targeted measure and will be planned to be implemented as a part of the targeted regulation already in 2016. Of course, the challenges mainly relate to implementation, for example, predicting the ratio of the ratio of drainage discharge and the end transport to the wetland to compare and substitute it with other measures. So our ongoing monitoring will provide more knowledge that we can allow to optimize it. And a subcatchment approach seems to be superior to field-scale planning. For the subsurface flow, we have observed the high removal rates efficiency. There's a large potential, but there are some challenges. As you saw, the removal efficiency is highly dependent on hydraulic residence times, and that means that we also require more knowledge on local drainage discharge rates in order to implement it correctly. Or, as an alternative, we need a drainage control structure. Lifetime is somehow uncertain. Then we have the problem with sulfide production, which gives a smell, and methane formation, which we also measured. Our recommendation is that it requires some optimization before full-scale implementation. For the phosphorus, I didn't talk about it today because there's a presentation Wednesday. So thank you for your attention.
I think we have time for one question for us. Yep,
so have the farmers decided what they're going to do, and then who decides whose field gets it, and do they all pay, or how does that work?
That's such a relevant question, and the authorities are right now also discussing with us what is the solutions, because of course the farmers now really want this measure instead of, for example, catch crops, and they want them to put more fertilizers on the ground, but they still do not come up with a solution whether it should be based on a farm scale nitrogen balance or whether it could be a subcatchment nitrogen balance. This is of course much harder because it requires some information on the subcatchment, but it's definitely more effective to do it that way. So it's an ongoing discussion, very relevant.
Great, thank you.